Welcome to this Expert HR podcast on gender pay gap reporting. I'm Noelle Murphy, and today I'm joined in the studio by Penny Cecil Hutton, who is a reward consultant here at Expert HR. Penny has been providing consultancy advice on the gender pay gap and gender pay gap reporting to organisations of all sizes over the past 18 months. Penny, with the next report due on the 5th of April 2019, I thought this might be a good time to do a recap of actually who has to do the reporting.
Employers with 250 or more employees are actually required to publish gender pay gap information by April 2019, and that's based on the data from 5th of April 2018. And separate gender pay gap figures need to be submitted for each legal entity meeting this criteria.
Have every organisation reported by each legal entity?
Well, we've actually spoken to a number of organisations who have not reported each legal entity, but only group figures. And they have actually laid themselves open to being fined for non-compliance with the regulations.
And I suppose this year there's a big emphasis then on them ensuring that they have produced the correct figures for each entity.
Absolutely.
So that's looking at those who are legally obliged to report figures. If we look at organisations and employers who sit outside that, have you had any contact with organisations that are reporting even when they're not obliged to?
Yes, we have actually. We've spoken to a number of organisations who are not legally required to report, but they have calculated their GPG as a matter of good practice and to demonstrate to their employees and customers their commitment to ethical practices and equality of opportunity irrespective of gender.
So that's really, they're just trying to drive transparency.
Absolutely.
So in terms of putting together the report, are there any common queries that come across your desk on a regular basis?
Yes, there are. The first is terminology. It's really a good idea for organisations to explain what the various terms used mean. For instance, throughout the report, we have means, which is the average as we know it, medians, which is literally the midpoint, and also the GPG reporting looks at both pay and bonus gaps, because really they shouldn't assume that employees will understand. And in fact, Expert HR produces a report entitled How to Understand Your Gender Pay Gap Figures, which actually explains the metrics in plain English terms.
So is there often a query between what equal pay is versus the gender pay gap? Is that something that you've come across in your consultancy work?
We've come across that a lot. It is really helpful to explain the difference between equal pay and the gender pay gap. So since the Equal Pay Act of 1970 is actually against the law to pay men and women differently for doing the same or similar jobs. So that's what equal pay is about. But gender pay gap, on the other hand, measures the distribution of staff across the pay quartiles, and a greater concentration of either gender in higher or lower paid roles will influence the overall gender pay gap. So they're two very different things.
So given that some organisations may well have already run their gender pay gap figures for the second year, have you seen anything in the figures when they compare it to last year? Is there any changes? Is there any movement at all?
There certainly is. The first thing is that organisations can't assume that their gender pay gap will necessarily get better over time. And some organisations have actually seen their gender pay gaps increase since last year. For example, if a highly paid female leaves the organisation, this can have a big impact. And in some cases, interventions have even shown an increased gender pay gap in the short term.
So is there any particular interventions or anything that you've seen that have had an effect on the short-term gender pay gap?
Well, some organisations have actually tried to recruit more female staff at entry level into specific disciplines such as scientific, technology, engineering or maths, with a view to developing them into more senior roles in the future. But what this actually means is they've got a glut of female staff at that lower level.
Okay, so that's really interesting. And have we seen any impact of the mean and the median?
Yes, we have. Certainly, the mean, the average, and the median may actually move in opposite directions, with one increasing and the other decreasing. And this is because they're two distinct, different measures. There may also be a different direction of movement between pay and bonuses, which is not necessarily what organisations expect to see.
Is there any particular reason for that?
Well, bonus arrangements may have a disproportionate effect on one gender. For example, when all staff receive a bonus as a fixed percentage of base salary, the high earners, who may be predominantly men, will earn much bigger monetary amounts than lower earners. But also at the other end of the scale, if commission payments are paid on piecework undertaken by lower paid workers, who may in this case be predominantly female, this again may skew the gender bonus gap in favour of females.
Okay, so employers really need to take a look at their bonus and their bonus pay arrangements so they can understand the narrative around the gender pay gap.
Yeah, that's true. And in fact, in our consultancy calls, we have a lot of discussion around bonuses.
So I think we've covered off reporting, but when you are talking to employers and they're looking at their gender pay gap, is there any kind of information or anything they're looking for specifically from you?
The first thing they always ask us is how can they improve their gender pay gap? So the sort of thing we tell them about are having an analytical job evaluation system. They may need to review their pay and grading structures. They may actually need to adjust their pay rates for specific roles. For instance, ring fence some salaries. They may also need to review their performance-related pay systems.
Do you see the role of line managers in there at all?
Certainly. They need to actually have objective recruitment processes and they need to train their line managers in these practices.
Do they need to look at anything around the qualification and experience requirement for new recruits?
Certainly. We do recommend that they review their qualification and experience requirements for new recruits. But more than that, we also suggest they actually sign up to some sector-wide initiatives. The sort of things we suggest are the Women in Finance Charter, the Tech She Can Charters, and there are a number of others as well. Because that really shows to both their employees and their customers that they're serious about this.
But none of this is actually going to change figures overnight, is it? It all takes time to create a structure and a culture that reports as much as possible a minimum or zero gender pay gap.
None of the things we suggest to them are going to be a short-term fix. In some cases, in fact, by trying to narrow the gender pay gap, organisations are going to widen it in the short term, as we've already mentioned. For instance, for an IT organisation, they can't themselves increase the number of female graduates coming through to them. However, as I mentioned before, they can think about the qualifications requirements and think about perhaps having an open access training programmes for female staff to try and develop those staff.
So it's about getting people in at the root level and then developing them.
Absolutely.
I know you did some research with employers about the steps they are planning to take to address the gender pay gap. Can you share a little bit of what you found with us?
Yes, of course. Surprisingly enough, over a quarter of responders said they weren't going to do anything.
I wonder why that is. Do you think they don't see it as a problem or they're not ready to take it seriously just yet?
I think probably not willing to take it seriously yet. And the thing is, these weren't necessarily organisations that had zero gender pay gaps.
So a gender pay gap did exist, but
yes.
Not at this point were they prepared
no.
to...
So in this SNAP survey said no action at all.
And for those who have or are looking to take steps, what kind of things are they doing?
Well, this was actually interesting because 43% said they were reviewing their recruitment processes. So really what we were talking about before. A third said they were reviewing their promotion processes once the staff were with them. And a quarter said they were reviewing salaries of specific groups of employees. So that was quite interesting.
So you would imagine there are groups of employees where they've seen significant gender pay gaps.
Yes, certainly. And that's something I was going to mention later on, because a number of organisations have said that specifically that's what they would be doing.
When you're talking to people on a daily basis and taking them through putting together their report and offering them some consultancy, what kind of examples of practice are you hearing about when people are looking to actually change their or address their gender pay gap?
Well, one example I've had, and in fact, this is mentioned quite often, organisations said that they do want to work towards a 50-50 representation at director level, which would be great. But time and time again, I hear that. And they're also saying when they're recruiting for a leadership team role, they're actually aiming to have a shortlist with at least 50% women, which again is a very, very challenging target. So I'll be interested to see how that pans out. But also they're talking about designing the roles in such a way that they're likely to attract women, which would really be positive. And that's more practical.
And is that as they, when they're looking to design the role, is it they're talking more about things like flexible working, or is it just that they are expanding the kind of length of experience, or, you know, retracting the length of experience that's required?
It's actually both. They're actually talking about designing the roles in such a way that they women can apply for them. But it's also about thinking whether they can be job shares, whether they can be part-time, so on and so forth, which in the past, probably they never considered.
And these can be quite senior roles.
Absolutely. This is what organisations are saying to us. Whether they walk the talk is another matter.
Well, I suppose that the very start of it has to be actually having the conversations around it, doesn't it?
Particularly absolutely.
For roles at that level. So it's good that that's happening.
Yes, absolutely. And I think what's wonderful about GPG is it's got us all talking and it's got organisations trying to address this. Whereas in the past, they might have just accepted the glass ceiling.
Are you hearing anything about a commitment to support the promotion of women into senior positions? So they're already employed within the organisation, but when it comes to trying to promote them or push them up through the ladder?
Certainly, what some organisations have said to us is that they're actually looking at the resources regarding CV and interview preparation for all staff, but specifically resources for women to support them in their career progression.
And what does that look like in practice then? Does that mean they are giving them more opportunities or more advice on putting together their CVs? Or is it that they're giving them some training and interview techniques, or... what are you hearing about that?
Well, I think it is both. It's assisting them with looking at their CVs and so on and so forth, but also looking at their training materials and content to ensure that they address gender and diversity issues.
And when we look at things like gender bias in recruitment, is that something that employers are looking to kind of address? You mentioned training line managers to ensure that they go into recruitment as gender neutral as possible. Is there any other steps that are being taken?
The sort of examples we've been given are actually having a minimum split on shortlisting for senior positions, which I know I've mentioned before, but also reviewing how and where they advertise job descriptions and trying to remove any unconscious bias from the role profiles and recruitment.
So I know you mentioned that employers should be looking to train line managers when it comes to recruitment so that line managers go into the process as gender neutral as possible. But is there any other steps they're taking?
We've been told that some organisations are looking to actually track how many roles are advertised as potentially part-time, job shares, or offering flexible hours, which is very interesting. And also they just want to try and remove any unconscious bias and also think about how they advertise and where they advertise.
So role profiles, they'll remove all gender bias there and try and put forward a more neutral role profile.
That's one way. And the other thing I have heard about is actually removing names. So you're literally looking at the content of that application.
So the person doing the shortlisting,
yes.
Yeah, absolutely, has no idea of...
the gender, age.
Gender, age, yeah.
It's purely looking at what that person can bring to the table.
And going back to looking at advertising roles as potential part-time or offering flexible hours, for more senior positions, that's an actual huge change,
isn't it? It is a huge change. And it'll be very interesting to see this how this actually pans out. And what our conversations will be like next year. Because this is what organisations are telling us they want to do. It'd be very interesting to see what they actually do.
So do we think this is still kind of at the aspirational level?
I certainly think so.
But then again, if the gender pay gap doesn't decrease and it just keeps building and efforts that they're making aren't working, it's going to have to happen though, isn't it?
Yeah, certainly. But the interesting thing is the movements in gender pay gaps for the various organisations have been quite unexpected. And as I've mentioned before, the mean can go one way, the median can go another way, the pay gap and the bonus gap can go two different ways as well. And we've found that organisations with near to zero gender pay gaps last year, if anything, it's very, very hard for them to maintain it. And they're the ones that are going to slip. And organisations who had very wide gender pay gaps last year, in fact, they've got more opportunity to improve. And in some ways, it's easier for them.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. It's literally just about the size of the gap.
Absolutely.
It? So, Penny, is there anything else that employers are telling you they're looking to do to address the gender pay gap?
There are a few other things. We have been told that they're actually going to look at staff at the lowest band to see not just at the senior levels to see if they can have that gender balance, but also at the lowest band. And certainly in calls with specific organisations, it can be one way or the other. Some organisations say to me, well, how on earth can I actually attract more men at this low end? And other organisations, it's more females. And it really does depend on the type of roles they have in their organisation. They are naturally attracting one gender or the other. But organisations are saying they're going to look at that as well, at the lowest end, not just the top. They're also going to look at particular areas of the business where commission and bonus schemes result in higher earnings. So sales. It'd be very interesting to see the gender balance of your sales teams, because that will heavily skew your gender bonus gap. And it can be one way or the other. It differs depending on the industry. So that's interesting. It's not always males in the sales roles. Some organisations, it's predominantly females. So that was interesting. And another example I had, just one more, a particular organisation said that what they were going to do is to have monthly meetings between key people in the organisation and to actually ensure that they understand their gender pay gap and act accordingly. So that was really good, because they're not going to just do it once a year. They're going to monitor it all during the year. So I think that was a really good example of good practice.
Based on all of your experience and putting you a bit on the spot here now, do you have any final words of wisdom for listeners today around the gender pay gap?
So firstly, remember the deadline. And that is the 5th of April 2019 for private sector and the 31st of March 2019 for public sector. Secondly, if you've got 250 or more employees, you need to report, but that is for each entity. And that is where organisations have fallen down this year. They've proudly told us, yes, we've reported in time. We actually look at what they've reported. It's not always on the government website, but it's sometimes on their own website. They've just published a group report and not the breakdown. Thirdly, you've got the government website there. So go and have a look at what other organisations' GPGs look like. And also go to their own websites, because you may get some useful hints and tips regarding style and content. And this is all in the public domain, so it's fair game. And lastly, don't leave it to the last minute. If necessary, you can prepare your organisation for a wider gender pay gap than 2017, if you've done the work now. You can also begin to address the causes of your gender pay gap. And you can begin to think about what your commentary is going to be for your website. And of course, this all means that you're ready to publish on time.
So it's really about controlling the narrative there, isn't it? And in order to do that, employers need to be on top of things.
Absolutely. Don't leave it to the last minute.
That's a great note to end on there, Penny, and thanks a million for joining us. If you want to delve deeper, Expert HR has prepared a how-to guide on understanding your gender pay gap figures. Details of the Expert HR Gender Pay Gap Reporting Service are also available on our site. Thanks to you for listening, and please do join us again soon for our next Expert HR podcast.